Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Political State from the Oklahoman. I'm Ben Felder. Along with me is my co-host, Justin Wingeter. And we are on the road, Justin. We are about an hour and a half south of Oklahoma City here in Lawton at the Bison Bash, the kind of kickoff to inaugural week for Governor-elect Kevin Stitt, who takes office actually in less than a week on Monday. But he's having here a festival, barbecue, country music, to kind of kick off his inaugural festivities. And we actually have interviews with Governor-elect Stitt, Representative Trey Caldwell, a Republican here from Lawton, here coming up. But just here on the road as we head into inauguration week.
There's pomp and circumstance, easy for me to say. Pomp and circumstance. There's also the smell of barbecue.
I can
and
smell it.
It's a Bison Bash. It's a little different. It's not your typical gubernatorial governor inauguration event, but here we are. It's Lawton.
Yeah, it is Lawton.
It's a very Lawton event.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be events on Saturday in Tulsa. There's a family festival and a ball in Tulsa. Then on Monday, the actual inauguration and the official inauguration ball with the Oklahoma City Philharmonic and maybe that more traditional ball atmosphere. But right now, it is a Southwest Oklahoma party, which we are here to cover. But like I said, we've had interviews with Governor-elect Kevin Stitt, Representative Trey Caldwell. We're going to go ahead and play those interviews that were just recorded here a few minutes ago. We'll be back with you at the second half of the podcast to kind of break down a little bit of the topics that we covered. But you're listening to Political State, the podcast here on location in Lawton at the Governor-elect Kevin Stitt Bison Bash. All right, we're here in Lawton at the Bison Bash, actually the first inaugural event for Governor-elect Kevin Stitt, who takes office on Monday. And sitting with us is the Governor-elect himself. Governor-elect Stitt, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, it's great to be here. Excited to be in Lawton, and it's fantastic. We just went and did some news media out there, and there's a big long click line, and can't wait to get out there and shake hands with everybody.
Yeah, and so you're kind of taking this tour across the state. You've got some events in Tulsa and obviously in Oklahoma City on Inauguration Day. But here in Lawton, I mean, it's kind of a chance for you to, you know, pay tribute to rural Oklahoma, which you did quite well in the election.
It sure did. You know, this is in October of 2017, I actually announced in Lawton. I did an announcement in Tulsa, one in Oklahoma City, and then I drove to Lawton.
Okay.
And so I've probably been here 7-8 times. I went over to Alta 7 or 8 times, but I went to all 77 counties, fell in love with this part of the state. Southwest Oklahoma is beautiful. You got the military bases here. They've got a lot going with the land, natural resources. And so I'm excited to come back. Just the people, it's just fantastic here.
Yeah, well, since we are kind of focusing here on kind of rural part of the state, and each kind of corner of the state has some of its, you know, a unique character and culture, but where does rural Oklahoma kind of fit into your agenda? I mean, how would you kind of speak to some of the needs and challenges that rural Oklahomans are facing right now?
Yeah, you know, you've got to, you know, if you're talking about expanding, you know, commerce, and if you're talking about, you know, what are the strategic advantages certain parts of the state have, you know, there's a lot of industries and businesses that want to be in rural Oklahoma that need land. You talk about the military stuff. You talk about flight areas, our utility prices. So that's what I was telling some of the other folks here is, you know, Enid, for example, just got a $1.2 billion company. Koch Industries actually moved a facility there. And the reason they did is because of our obviously abundance land and also natural, also the utility prices. We have some of the lowest utility prices in the country. So we have to take those advantages we have and make sure we look at the industries and actually pair those up. And I think rural Oklahoma has a lot to offer when you look at that.
Yeah, you know, so you become governor here in a few days on Monday. I know you've obviously been working, you know, already kind of getting your office together. You know, you've got an aggressive agenda. You know, you've got a lot of goals on your plate. I'm curious, this first month, month one, what's a priority? What are some of the priorities for you right out of the gate? I mean, I know you've thought about it. So, what are you looking forward to, and what are you hoping to kind of get accomplished or at least get the ball rolling on here in the first few weeks of your administration?
Well, I think it starts with us, with agency accountability. And we've talked about a lot of that on the campaign trail, but it's so important. When I redesigned our cabinet and actually added a few cabinet positions, I actually separated a few. It just didn't make sense to me. And I studied all the governors. I mean, I went back even to David Walter's cabinet and Keating's and Fallon's and Henry's and looked at how they structured it. But, you know, Oklahomans select, you know, they elected me as their chief executive officer. And that means the chief executive runs the executive branch. That means the chief executive runs the agencies, the commissions. But I'm telling Oklahomans we have to be able to hire and fire the agency directors, not to be a bad guy, but to create the accountability. So I make sure that I can deliver on the promises we made to Oklahoma. And so those first 100 days, that's what we're going to be focused on. We're going to get that. I've been working with the legislature. My Secretary of State, Michael Rogers, is doing a fantastic job of working with the House and the Senate. We're going to get that done.
I think some people are probably surprised to see you add cabinet positions. This is a small government guy. He's going to shrink government. What's your response to that?
Well, constitutionally, you can have 15 different cabinet positions. So it's not like I added them. I just changed some names. I deleted some, and I changed some. And like, for example, Health and Human Services used to be under one secretary. I actually moved it under two because that was $8 billion, and it was all flowing up to one person. And then you had military and VA that were separated. That was only like $20 million. It's a huge difference, $8 billion versus $20 million. So I combined military and VA. And again, a previous governor used to have it that way. And so then I broke up the Health and Human Services because I wanted one person focused on health and mental health, and then somebody else focusing on human services by itself. So it's not that I added government jobs. I just rearranged the cabinet where it made sense to me, and then focused on those agencies reporting to those people.
Yeah. So you ran as an outsider, and so that kind of, you know, every hire you make, every decision, it's kind of looked through that lens of insider versus outsider, right? And you've already made several key staff hires and cabinet nominations. I mean, it's kind of a mix. You've got some people that have quite a bit of government experience, some people coming from the private sector. How would you kind of assess the team that you've built around you so far? I mean, do you feel like you've got the, you know, a comfortable mix of experience to lean on, being this will be your first position in government, but also kind of tapping from the business world that you come from?
You know, I really do. I mean, my chief of staff is Michael Junk, and he's fantastic. He's worked for Senator Inhofe and Lankford, Senator Inhofe and Coburn. But he was also in municipality government. He was the deputy mayor of Tulsa. He helped G.T. Bynum win. And so he's fantastic. So he's kind of the insider. Then we have Donnell Harder, who is the deputy secretary of state. And then we had Michael Rogers, who is a former legislator that carried 1010XX. That was the hardest, in my opinion, piece of legislation that passed through in the last 20 years. And he was the chair of the education. So that's how important it was for me to have somebody that knew how that worked. But then when you come about running agencies, that's where you need the outsiders. You need the people from the business world. And so we've got a few more folks that we'll be announcing shortly. But the people I'm interviewing are like, Kevin, I don't know anything about government. And I said, that's exactly why I need you, because this is about delivering services on that side. So it's going to be fantastic. When they tell me, hey, we need to get this done to actually move the needle on an agency, then that's when that goes back over to my chief of staff and my government folks to run legislation to make the change that we need that the business people are telling me so we can actually deliver better services and be top 10 in all those areas we talked about.
Speaking of business, is it weird to leave your business? Is it weird to be outside looking in now and kind of watching it but not making decisions?
You know, it was about 2 years ago, but you've got to realize I've stepped away from my company 2 years ago to run for governor full time, and I have a great team, and now I've officially kind of separated and totally outside of the company now. But they're doing a fantastic job. But I'm so energized and focused on moving Oklahoma forward. I really haven't thought much about it. I'm just so focused on getting the right people hired at this point because Oklahomans are counting on me to turn our state around. And that's what I was elected for, and that's what I tend to do.
Well, you talked about, you know, you stepped away a couple years ago to run. And, you know, just this last week, you've kind of put together kind of a plan in which you asked the attorney general to review. You know, can you tell us just a little bit about that? Some of our listeners who, you know, are asking about your relationship with your business. You've stepped away, but you're asking the AG to, you know, I guess, kind of give a mark of approval on what steps you've taken.
Yeah, well, we just wanted to we basically just lined out everything to show Oklahomans how we're going to be transparent, and I have nothing to do with my business interest. And no governor in history has ever gone to these steps to actually be this transparent. And so we're telling the attorney general, just look this over, make sure you don't see any changes we should make. We actually have a different trustee. I'm not even the trustee of the company. I don't get paid from the business anymore. We're totally separated. We have somebody else managing all of our assets.
Yeah, it's a couple more minutes with you here. I want to ask you, you know, your wife, Sarah, so often she's asked about you. I want to ask you about, tell us a little bit about your wife. You know, she's talked about kind of the role that she sees in your administration. I know she's kind of doing a lot of the work on the inauguration events. You know, she's with your family and, you know, we'll be moving to Oklahoma City here after several months. But what kind of role do you see for your wife? And just talk about kind of her partnership with you in this journey.
Yeah, well, first off, she is fantastic. I'm telling you, Oklahomans are going to fall in love with her. She is, she's really, really special. Sarah, she's really passionate about education and mental health. She had some family members that struggle with mental health, so it's something that she's super passionate about. She's really getting involved and digging in on that. And obviously, we have six children, as well as myself, but her passion is also education as well. But she's gonna be involved. Obviously, she's a full-time mom too, and helping me out. But she's already been speaking a couple times a week at different places, and people just absolutely love her. I can't say enough great things about her. We've been married now for 20 years, and she's truly, truly my partner and love of my life.
Yeah. Well, Governor-elect Kevin Stitt, congratulations. Good luck as you move forward here. Becomes Oklahoma's 28th governor on Monday. So now you got a lot in store over the next few days, and then a lot on your plate once you take office. But we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for coming down. See you guys.
All right, we're here at the Governor-elect Kevin Stitt's Bison Bash here in Lawton, kicking off inauguration events over the next few days. And sitting with us from Lawton is Representative Trey Caldwell, a newly elected representative.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, elected here last November. Has already taken office at the Capitol early this week, getting ready for the new session. And Representative, thanks so much for having us in your town and for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for making the trip down I-44 to come see us down here in Southwest Oklahoma.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
Well, obviously, we're making the trip because the governor-elect is making the trip. And just to start off with, I mean, what does it mean that the Oklahoma's incoming governor would include, Lawton on its list? I mean, you know, not to put you guys down the list, mm-hmm. In pecking order, but a lot of these events take place in Tulsa or Oklahoma City, but mm-hmm. we're starting off here in Lawton.
Yeah, normally, the kind of, I guess, mood and the thought process that everybody down here is we kind of get forgotten about. And I think it's really refreshing to see a governor that not only kind of puts his money where his mouth is. He promised us in the campaign that he was going to care about rural Oklahoma, western Oklahoma. And, he's down here. He's making a concerted effort to come down here to southwest Oklahoma, and not just specifically Lawton. But, I mean, it's a lot closer drive for the people that live in Altus and Mangum and Frederick and Duncan. And there's a lot that southwest Oklahoma has to offer. And it's great that he's coming down here and bringing light to that. And we really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you some specific questions about the governor-elect's agenda and kind of mm-hmm. what things you're hoping to see from him. Let me ask you some questions about yourself. Like I mentioned, newly elected to the House. First off, why'd you run this year? So many new people running this year. I'm curious, why did you get into the race?
The biggest catalyst for me to get in the race was probably the teacher walkout. It kind of woke me up and made me want to run. And then my particular rep, I ran against an incumbent that had been in a political dynasty family in this area. His mother had been elected down here for 12 years right before him. So some of his adverse comments towards teachers, some of his stances that he took on certain issues, they really kind of woke me up and said, if I want to fix it, I need to go out and do it myself. So that was probably the biggest catalyst, was the walkout and the fact that Oklahoma's teachers were not adequately paid and then our education system was not adequately funded.
So much of the story about education in Oklahoma right now is these challenges that are taking place all across the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening in Oklahoma City, it's happening in small towns. But what are some of the unique challenges that your schools, your teachers are facing here? I mean, we're not too far from the Texas border. Mm-hmm. There was the teacher pay raise, but we're still seeing, thousands of teachers leave the profession, leave mm-hmm. the state. I mean, what are some of the specific education issues for you representing this area?
So I think our biggest issue here is the proximity to Texas. And, it's a two-edged sword in a lot of ways, but when it comes to education, it cuts against us. You take a teacher from Lawton with, 20 years of service here as an Oklahoma teacher, or 25 years of service, she's literally a 25, 30-minute commute to teaching in Burke Burnett, Texas. To even make it even worse, you take the southern part of my district, which is Granfield, Frederick and Tipton. If you lived in Frederick, and it's hit Frederick the hardest, before the teacher pay raise, they'd lost 12 teachers. Well, 12 teachers doesn't sound like a lot, but for a Class A school, I mean, you're talking about 15-20% of their teaching, their faculty. They're a 20-minute drive from teaching in a school in Texas, so they don't have to uproot their kids. There's no, I guess, for lack of a better word, cost of entry you know, for someone in Oklahoma City to uproot their family and move to Dallas or to move to Gainesville, right down the I-35 corridor, you're talking about taking your kids out of school, buying a new house, whereas us all along the Texas border, all along the, you know, the Red River counties, and then even to a certain extent, the people that are on the Arkansas border, you know, they're right there. That proximity is a huge issue. So we have to make sure that we're competitive in our teacher pay. Otherwise, you know, the good's going to continue to drive out the bad. So, I mean, we're going to keep losing our best and brightest teachers, because when Texas comes here to recruit, they don't come here and get our rookie teachers or our teachers that are you know, maybe not the best faculty members in on staff. They come get our best science teachers, our best STEM teachers, yeah. And so we see that effect. It's really, really big issue down here.
Has the legislature done enough on education, or is there something you're looking for this legislative session on the issue of education?
I think that 1010XX was a great start, and I think it showed. The passage of 1010XX in conjunction with the Republican primary, where we got rid of some of the more dogmatic members, I think that's proved to the public that that's a good start, that we're moving in the right direction, but I don't think our work's done. I don't think one of the company corporations here in my district, Goodyear, you know, their factory motto is there is no finish line. So I definitely don't think that we're done yet. I think we have more work to do this session. But if y'all come and interview me in 8 years, and hopefully we'll have another event here in Lawton 8 years from now, you know, I don't think the work will be done then either. I mean, I think we always have ability to improve on making sure we get positive education outcomes, making sure we're properly funding education, because education, in my opinion, is one of the, you know, foundations of, you know, growing and creating, you know, prosperous communities.
You referred to the change in the legislature, still a Republican-controlled House and Senate, but, you know, we saw several incumbents lose this year. You beat an incumbent in the primary. What kind of shift has taken place, do you feel like, in the Republican caucus? I mean, you know, a lot of the focus is on kind of that opposition to the tax increase, but a lot of people feel like the caucus has shifted more to the middle, maybe, or more. I mean, how would you kind of describe the shift, or what kind of Republican, you know, caucus do we have right now in the House, do you think?
Philosophically, I don't necessarily think there is much of a philosophical shift as some people will say. You take me, for instance. I'm still a very fiscal conservative Republican. I think there is more, there are less dogmatic. There's more people that are willing to work together, willing to say, hey, put us in the room so we can talk and have these conversations. And at the end of the day, we have to acknowledge that, you know, things like roads, bridges, education, they cost money. So we as a government, the government has a responsibility to its citizenry to fund it. And I think that's the biggest shift I see. I don't necessarily see a true linear shift from left to right, or from right to left, excuse me, but more of a shift in the legislators there that are there now are more pragmatic and look for common sense solutions to the problems that Oklahoma faces going forward. Yeah.
I liked your hypothetical about us being here 8 years from now, and maybe we will be. How will we know then if you and the governor were successful in your job?
I think some good metrics that we can use to judge that is to see, hopefully start seeing those emergency certifications going down, to see more people wanting to get into the education profession, to stop seeing the exodus of our best and brightest teachers going retiring early here. The biggest problem that we have around in this area is people will retire early here and then go to Texas to what they call double dip. So if you start seeing those numbers come down, I think that would be a sign of success. And I think also looking at education outcomes, looking at how Oklahoma does comparative to the rest of the country. I mean, that's the great thing about being in state government is we have the ability to compare ourselves to other states that are similar to us in size and socioeconomic standing. So I think those are probably three of some of the metrics that we can kind of look at and say, judge ourselves against and see if we're actually doing. Lieutenant Governor, how are you?
Lieutenant Governor-elect, heckling us.
Yeah.
Cutting you off from what you were saying,
right.
He walks away, changes thought. Well, Justin's question about, you know, judging success here in 8 years, You talk about the education component, which is so important down here. You know, what about some of the other issues that are maybe unique here in a rural community?
So the second biggest issue, and I wouldn't even say it's second, it's really education is 1A and access to healthcare is 1B, which hits really close to home with us because the only hospital that's actually in my district, because both of the Lawton hospitals are not in my district and neither is the Indian hospital, it's not in my district either, that are in Lawton. But my only hospital was shut down 2 years ago. So whether that's, we have to find a solution to the problem. And I don't necessarily have all the answers right now as we sit here and talk of what that solution is, but we need people in my party, the other party, to come together and say, we need to figure out how we solve this problem going forward because we need rural access to healthcare. Rural communities need access to healthcare because if we want rural Oklahoma to grow and to thrive, it has to have access to healthcare because the first time a company, if you try to recruit a company that can, will come in and bring jobs to help a community grow, the first thing, one of the first things they're going to ask about are two things, in which is issue 1A and 1B, and which is, do you have access to healthcare? I mean, do you have a hospital? Do you have an ER? Do you have doctors? And then the second thing is what's your education funding look like? Because yeah, education funding is a key, there's a key correlation between education funding and educational outcomes. So we just, it's more than anything, it's just about making those things priorities. So those are two of the biggest priorities. One of the other issues that's unique to Southwest Oklahoma and Comanche County in particular is per person, we have more 100% disabled military veterans than any other county in Oklahoma, out of all 77 counties. And actually, as of, I think, 2 weeks ago, we actually passed Oklahoma City in the total amount of disabled veterans that we have. And so we're talking about a county of maybe 160,000 people has more, not just per capita, actually more disabled military veterans in our county than any other county. So we have to make sure we cultivate that because those men and women are huge assets for this community. They come here, they choose to settle here, retire here, and they're integral in our communities. They become, they're in their second careers, they become teachers, they become lawyers, doctors, business owners. And so we got to continue to cultivate that and make sure that they know that, you know, we're there for them. I think that's a huge thing in this community.
Yeah, well, let me go back real quick to healthcare as we wrap up here. You know, I think that's going to be a big topic for the legislature this year, obviously, all these headlines of hospitals closing. Mm-hmm. Your district's experienced that a couple years ago, as you mentioned. You and I spoke on the phone last week kind of setting up this interview, and we got into talking about some policy issues such as mm-hmm. healthcare. You know, I asked you about Medicaid expansion. Now, I didn't want to put words in your mouth. You didn't say that you were going to vote yes for it or that, you know, you said mm-hmm. that it was something you'd be willing to look at and mm-hmm. consider. But even if you look back 5 years ago, that's something that would be hard to hear a Republican say. But here you are saying, like, hey, I'm open to having the conversation. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think it goes back to not being dogmatic. When we talked about that party shift, yeah. I do think the Republican Party, the people that have been elected, are less dogmatic than are some of our predecessors. I want to look and have a conversation on anybody. And I told you this on the phone the other day. Republicans don't have a monopoly on good ideals. And so... excuse me. So we need to look at that. And I don't necessarily know if that is the federal government, you know, taking the expansion dollars, doing it in block grants. Or I don't know what that solution is, but it needs to be talked about. And there, that conversation needs to happen because that money is out there. And that money's already coming out of Oklahomans' pockets. It went to the federal level. So we need to make sure that money is repatriated or brought back to the state. And I don't necessarily know. I'd have to sit down on a particular... I'm not committing to saying I would vote for this bill or that bill, but I mean, I'm definitely going to be open to it. If you can tell me that we can start opening up hospitals in rural Oklahoma, or at least in some capacity, and whether that's, you know, a 15-bed, you know, with an ER or something, there has to be a solution. And so I'll look under every nook and cranny to try to find it. And I definitely won't cut anything out, you know, beforehand. And I think that goes back to, you know, I talked about earlier is, we have to be pragmatic, and we have to look for solutions. The one thing that this election should have taught everybody, every politician, every political animal, every reporter, journalist, whomever, it should have taught us that the people in Oklahoma, and even in America in a lot of ways, if you go back 2 years, they're tired of the same old, same old. They want results. They want people to work together. They're tired of the habitual naysaying. They're tired of, you know, the show aspect of what politics is, and they want people to go to Oklahoma City and go to Washington and get to work. And so that's one thing that I promised all my people, or all my constituents when I ran, is that I want to go work. I'm ready to go to Oklahoma City and go to work on day one to find solutions.
Yeah.
So.
Well, a lot of work ahead of you, a new governor, a lot of new representatives like yourself, and we're here to party. We want to let you go enjoy that as well. But we really appreciate you sitting down with us.
Thanks
and
for taking the time,
hopefully
guys.
Maybe connect later on in the legislative session. So good luck with everything. Thank you, Representative Caldwell.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, welcome back to the Political State Podcast. I'm Ben Felder, along with my co-host Justin Wingerter. And Justin, the smell of barbecue continues to get stronger here at the Bite and Bash here in Lawton. Recently, we just visited with Governor-elect Kevin Stitt, Representative Trey Caldwell. Let's start off with the Governor-elect who takes office here in a few days. You know, coming down here is kind of a way to pay homage to rural Oklahoma, where he did very well in the elections. You know, the urban-rural split that's happening across America with politics, Democrats versus Republicans, it's very much true here in Oklahoma, and we saw that, and here Governor-elect Stitt is coming down here you know, give some attention to a part of the state that sometimes gets ignored.
He knows these are the people that elected him. He knows that very well. If you look at the map, it's pretty clear. He's still a city guy, and I am too. I'm not going to fault him for that. But he nonetheless has to show people down here and elsewhere in the state that he understands them, or at least will represent them well. I mean, if there's a limit probably to the extent that he understands them, but he nonetheless has to show that he's with them. And that, I think, begins tonight. If it obviously began to some extent during the campaign, but now that he has won, what kind of governor will he be? Will he remember people down here who often feel forgotten? We talked to Representative Caldwell about that. They often feel like they're overlooked by Tulsa and Oklahoma City. He's here to say, you're not, and I'm here.
Well, that interview with Representative Caldwell, the first thing he talked about was education. And education is a topic that's being talked about across the state, but particularly here when you have a rural community where funding struggles exist because of a decline in enrollment. State dollars follow students, so when you lose students to declining enrollment, you lose some funding. But when you're so close to the state line, like Texas, where teachers can go make more money, especially those who may retire and then kind of double dip, as the representative said, teacher pay remains a big issue. And that's kind of interesting to me, because last year we saw teacher pay raise approved. Teachers continued with the walkout because they said they wanted more money for the classroom. And I'm not saying that teachers down here don't want more funding for classrooms. But Representative Caldwell is saying we need more money in teachers' paychecks, and that is something that Governor-elect Kevin Stitt has said he wants in year one, another teacher pay raise. And when you talk to people down in this area, you see why that's so important to the incoming governor.
Yeah, and Representative Caldwell is saying there is a direct correlation between the amount of money you put into education and educational outcomes. Not exactly a shocking idea there, but it nonetheless says that we need more money if we want to improve educational outcomes. The representative talking about two issues the Democrats often harp on, education and especially health care and rural health care, and opening up the idea of Medicaid expansion with them a little bit there, and not totally going for it, as we talked about, but he nonetheless is willing to have that conversation.
Which is leaps and bounds for where we saw Republicans just a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Oklahoma, one of the states that has declined Medicaid expansion, Governor Fallon has said she won't touch it. Now, to be fair, Governor-elect Kevin Stitt has said he's not for Medicaid expansion.
Right.
If you kind of dissect some of the things that he has said, he has said that I want to see some things taken care of first before we even have that conversation. But he has been pretty clear that he's not, you know, a fan of that idea right now. But here we see a recently elected representative, but a Republican, you know, who beat an incumbent. And I think he kind of has maybe similar feelings and thoughts to some of the other newly elected representatives in this Republican House. And just the idea that he's willing to have that conversation is something that I think Democrats will say, okay, hey, we'll take that, and we'll try to see if we can spark that conversation this year.
Yeah, I've heard some talk in the legislature and talking with our health reporter that there is some talk that if this idea of a Medicaid expansion is going to the ballot, some Republicans are going to want to jump in there and say, before it does that, why don't we do it? Why don't we do it in our way, in a way that we think is better? Very much a flashback to medical marijuana. We had, you know, rather than let this go to a ballot question where it becomes a bit of an unknown and it can sometimes be poorly written or at least vaguely written, why don't we take care of it ourselves? Why don't we do it in a Republican way, a conservative way? There is some talk about that, at least in the Senate Health Committee right now. So interesting to see, but we'll see what comes of it. I mean, just to have that discussion is a step. If you're in favor of Medicaid expansion, it's you're probably a get cautiously optimistic with that, but it's very far from actually taking that leap.
Yeah. Well, like I said, Representative Caldwell talking about education, talking about healthcare, important because when you're trying to attract people to rural Oklahoma, these are two big important things. When you're trying to attract business. Attract business is something that Stitt has talked a lot about. He wants to be the CEO governor and has promised to be pretty aggressive when it comes to business recruiting. You know, he even told us, you know, hey, I'm looking for ways to bring businesses not just to Oklahoma City and Tulsa, but to some of these kind of mid-sized cities like Enid or maybe Lawton. And that is his focus going in. I mean, he wants to be a business-minded governor. You know, if you're a critic of his, you're going to say, hey, he lacks the experience to get it done. If you're a supporter of his, you're going to say he's going to bring in that kind of fresh approach that the state needs. And we're about to find out, you know, which side is right on that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And Representative Caldwell saying, you know, if you want to bring people, you know, bring businesses to this part of the state, you better also give them an education system. You better also give them a healthcare system because people don't want to move to places where there are poor schools and no hospital. I mean, that's just, you know, by and large, something you general services that people like. And so interesting to see how that those two ideas could mesh pretty well. But I don't know what that looks like in terms of spending. Do you spend more on healthcare? Do you spend more on education in order to bring about Stitt's pro-business agenda here?
Yeah. Well, you know, you asked this question. I thought it was a great question. He's already focused on becoming governor. He's been focused on this for more than a year now, you know, running for the seat and now after the election, putting his government together. But is he going to miss the business world? I mean, that has been who he is. I mean, even so much so that, you know, he hasn't even regularly voted in elections up until recently.
Yeah.
This has not been a guy plugged into politics. And that has been his appeal to a lot of people is that
right.
He is that outsider. But here he is kind of entering a very new world. And the biggest question I have, or one of the biggest questions I have, is what's that change of pace going to be like for him? Is he going to enjoy being governor, you know, working in state government where the pace is a lot slower than it is in the private sector? Is the office going to shape him? Is he going to shape the office? I guess that's always the big question when you see someone come in.
And he talked about, you know, I'm the chief executive. I control all these agencies. And certainly to a large extent, he's right. But when you're CEO, you get to make decisions like that. I mean, you get to make decisions as long as you have the money, pretty much overnight. It's very different even if you have the money in government. You just have to work through systems. There are checks and balances. Government is not supposed to work fast. It's meant to work deliberately, and sometimes that means slowly. You could see someone like that getting frustrated at the slow pace of government, at the need for collaboration, and the level of bureaucracy, but we'll see.
Yeah. You know, some of the things that he's talked about wanting to change for the governor's office is having more ability to hire and fire agency heads, something he's talked a lot about. You know, I think anytime you have a new governor coming in and you talk to people at various state agencies, there's always a little bit of kind of uncertainty about what to expect. I'll tell you what, I've heard a lot of it from people who work at state agencies. I mean, not to say that there aren't people working for the state government right now that are, you know, applauding Stitt and welcoming in, but there's a lot of just unknown. What is it going to look like if this governor does get those powers? And it looks like he will. The legislature seems prepared to give it to him. This is a guy that wants more control over these state agencies, and it's caused a lot of people in state government right now to just be unsure about what that's going to mean, because this guy has big ideas. And like you said, I mean, he's used to being a CEO where you have that, you know, kind of total power, and that's what he feels like Oklahoma needs in order to get back on the right track.
And maybe he's right, but it does make you, I'm sure it makes you a little unsure when you're accustomed to doing things one way at a state agency or something, and you hear a guy talking about firing people, anybody in any business. If you were, let's take his business example, if you were in a business and the new guy came in talking about how bad he wants to fire people, you might get a little nervous about things. That's understandable. So, yep, we'll see. I mean, what else can you say at this point? But we will see.
Yeah,
and we'll be there.
We will be there. We will see on Monday, Governor-elect Stitt becomes Governor Stitt sometime around noon on Monday. Becomes a state official for the first time in his career, a businessman that's entering politics for the first time. We are going to be there at the inauguration. We're going to have complete coverage. We may actually have a special political state episode next week to kind of dissect what we've seen. But right now, we're in Lawton. We're at this Bison Bash. a festival to celebrate the incoming governor and a festival to celebrate rural Oklahoma, like you said, was so important to his election. And there's a lot of high hopes in this part of the state that a governor is coming in that's going to deliver some solutions to some key problems that they have. Yep. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Political State. You can find each and every episode on your favorite podcasting app or newsok.com. With Justin, I'm Ben on location in Lawton, Oklahoma. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week.